Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
On today's podcast, we dig into some serious topics, and I know this is a time that we've really been affected by everything going on in our country. It's been difficult to deal with. There's a lot of things to sort out. There's a lot of insight we're looking to get from other people, and I think the best thing we can do is talk about that and talk about people who have experienced some things through their careers or in their particular fields. And so we're going to have a series of those conversations. And joining me today is a former head football coach from Camp McKinley High School, Warren G. Harding High School. He's been around Ohio here. He is in the Ohio High School Hall of Fame and a repeat performer here on the podcast, Coach Tom McDaniels. Coach, it's great to have you here.
It's great to be with you again, Keith.
So, Coach, something that got my attention the other day, and I've been reading a lot and trying to get perspective on things, and you know, for me, it's something we talked about before we hit record here. I've just been, you know, kind of pumping the brakes here and trying to not make any kind of emotional decisions about anything, trying to really see everything going on and understand, you know, what really got us here and maybe where we go from here. Because I think more important than anything is not just to understand what got us here, but to understand where we're going. And you posted something that I thought was great, and I'm going to read it right here. In diverse towns and cities, kids came from different neighborhoods, different grade and middle schools, different faiths, different economic statuses, different races, differing politics, and broken and unbroken homes. The many and varied became one. We call it a high school football team. It didn't happen overnight, but it happened. The me became we. They gave up some of themselves to be a part of something greater than themselves. They made sacrifices and were inconvenienced. They competed against each other in order to play football for each other. Thanks, high school football. I think, Coach, what you wrote right there explained it better than anything, and what we do and our opportunity as coaches to make a difference in this world. And I know, by and large, that's what our football coach community really wants to do. They want to be able to take what is a very tough time right now, pull people together like they always have, but maybe reach out from here, take it outside of their little programs, their little communities they've created, and try to make something better in the world that helps us get through this time. And I think that description of what you said there, of what high school football is, really encapsulates everything we do as coaches, especially those coaches who have the opportunity to work in diverse communities.
I would agree with that. And I was adding up the years, you know, the 40 years that I coach, I coached high school football. I believe that about 27 of them were in urban settings and in very, very diverse settings and environments. You know, I think I gravitated toward that. I grew up in Orville, Ohio, and you know, there was a measure of diversity there. But those communities, I think I fit them and they fit me. And, you know, what I wrote, I observed. You know, we you know, whether it was Canton or whether it was Warren, you know, we've got these kids scattered throughout these smaller cities. You know, it's not New York City or Chicago or Miami, but you know, they you know, in Canton there were 16 grade schools, there were 4 middle schools in the 4 quadrants of the city, and you know, they worked their way through the school system, and at some point, you know, they became high school kids, and we had to take these kids from these 16 grade schools, 4 middle schools, and get them to, you know, to believe in each other and to give up on themselves, you know, for the betterment of the whole, and to play together and to work together and to learn about each other, and to cooperate and to handle problems, you know, while trying to win football games at the same time. And then I saw the very same thing happen in Warren. You know, it seemed to me, like we were able to do that, you know, in that locker room and as part of that group. And it wasn't necessarily happening outside the group. You know, it wasn't necessarily happening on that scale in the larger community. You know, it sort of makes me feel like, and I speak specifically to football, but I suppose it could happen in all other sports too, but it just seemed to me that's another one of those things that makes football unique. You know, I like you, observe and pay attention to what's going on. And, you know, at some point, you know, those thoughts occurred to me. So I thought, you know, I'm going to share them just to get it out. Whether it appealed to anybody or struck a chord with anybody. But I also wanted to remind people that, you know, that kind of cooperation and that outcome is possible. I wasn't the only guy, you know, that was part of that. That's happening across our country. And specifically, the football locker room, the high school football teams, I think it happens there more frequently maybe than it does in other settings.
And I think that's, to me as a coach, what's encouraging about that is that outcome is possible. We, as you said, see that happen across the country, that people can find a way to make it work. But there was something you said in there that really I think is so important to what's going on, is you said we learned about each other. And, you know, I think that's one of the main things you need to grow in any aspect as a person, is you have to continuously be learning. So in this case, learning about each other, I don't think it's anything of finger pointing. There's so many things that have happened up to this point in our history. This is right now that opportunity to learn about each other. We have to obviously set some things aside. We have to get to the table together would be an important thing. And I know there's a lot of anger around this and those kinds of things, but ultimately people need to sit down and they need to learn about each other. Maybe turn the TV off and quit learning about each other through the TV, because it's not telling us the truth, but actually sit down with people and learn about each other. And, you know, there's always going to be those differences. It crosses racial lines too. There's all kinds of differences, as you pointed out in that, you know, what I read in the beginning here. But we have to, you know, be able to come to some of that common understanding that we're all here together to make this place, to make Earth better than it was when we got here, right? Just like you do in a football program. You want to leave that program better than it was when you got there.
Correct. And we do that simultaneously with the fact that we're running into each other and knocking each other down, and we're being physical, and we're playing an emotional game, and yet, you know, we manage to function and work together in spite of being in an environment where it could lead to some other kind of behavior, some other outcome. So there's a lot of restraint taking place, you know, while we're learning about each other and while we're growing into what ultimately becomes a team. Something that I think that wasn't part of what I posted, but I believe this, and I was asked about it by a former student of mine who was doing a doctoral dissertation, and it was about athletics and politics, and she wanted to know how I fit those two things together as a coach. And I remember telling her I was concerned about politics because I saw sports and I saw a locker room as an integrator, and yet politics is a separator. Mm-hmm. So I didn't work real hard at balancing those two things. I worked real hard at taking a bunch of kids and helping them to, you know, relate to each other and become a team. But I didn't necessarily want politics to be part of that process. And I don't know whether that's right or wrong, but I know as a head coach, one of the things that we had to do is we had to to manage distractions, and I knew that politics and that could be a distraction. And so we wanted to eliminate that as much as I did. I wanted to eliminate as much of that as I could, from our football experience, without being ignorant that politics was happening, all around us. But I don't know if that connects. I think it does to what we're talking about. I know that sure. That's part of what I thought about, when I wrote those things.
Yes, and you continued on, Coach, and you shared an article. You modified a little bit from Herb Childress in 1998, Why High School Football Works and Society Doesn't. And, we're just going to go through some of those points as talking points for our conversation here. But the first one being, in football, teenagers are considered important contributors rather than passive recipients. Such an important thing, right? Everybody wants to be a contributor. And I think, when you look at the issues around this, I think, there certainly has been, and we see all the examples of people being marginalized for certain reasons, again, whether that's race or gender or their views, their religion, etc. But a football team, those young men, young women in some cases, are considered important contributors.
Absolutely, and one of the things that I learned early was to celebrate as many of those kids on the team as possible. Not just the guys that were being recruited, not just the guys that were had reputations as good players, but we tried to recognize and honor and celebrate everybody who earned it and deserved it. Every week we had an offensive scout team player of the week. We had a defensive scout team player of the week. We had a JV game player of the week. One on offense, one on defense. Where would a football team be without quality scout teams, show teams, whatever we want to call them, different terms, but it's all the same thing. Where would we be without those guys, who maybe didn't get to play on game night, or maybe didn't get to play unless, we had a game, in firm control. But we wanted them to feel worthy. We wanted them to feel significant. And so we never neglected them. And I think that the kids, that were part of our program, I think that they appreciated that. That was meaningful to them. So they were absolutely important contributors, even though, they may not have logged an awful lot of playing time, maybe because they were young, maybe because they weren't as skilled, but they certainly had a role, and it was an important one. As many people as we could be involved in that process, we involved in that process.
Yeah, that's what I love about our sport. And, you get 22 guys on the field, but you see double or triple that, on each sideline. And there's a lot of work that went into it. And there's those people who get to get out and lead and do that job, and the other guys who have to cheer them on. But ultimately, everybody is in it together. Everybody has pulled together. Everybody has contributed to that cause.
That's correct. One of the other things that I thought about, and again, this is, when you cut grass, as an old guy at a golf course, you have plenty of time to think while you're blowing grass for 5 or 6 hours. I have plenty of time to think about this, and I think that that's where some of these ideas are sparked.
Well, number two, in football, teenagers are encouraged to excel. There's no such thing as good enough. Really love that about football, right? I mean, at the end of the day, even times, Coach, when we win, we're focusing on, yeah, that's good, but what can we do to keep getting better?
Yeah, I was a terrible winner. It's one of the regrets that I have, and I don't have many, but I don't know that I enjoyed and I celebrated the wins as much as I should have, and I didn't necessarily let those around me enjoy them and celebrate them as much as they should have. So I might have taken that to an extreme. But the whole idea of about, you know, there being nothing, you know, as good enough, it, you know, we talk about, you know, raising the bar and getting better and, you know, not being complacent, never being satisfied with an outcome. And I think those lessons, you know, those are lessons that take place, you know, in another classroom, and it's, you know, it's full of kids wearing helmets and shoulder pads. And yet it's a classroom where they learn that maybe more so than any kind of school subject classroom that they might participate in. Herb Childress originally, when he wrote the article, it was called 17 Reasons Why Football is Better Than High School. And so he was comparing, he was embedded in a school for a year, and he was an ethnographer. And you know, that's a form of anthropology, but he studied individual human culture. And so he was in this school system, and he wasn't expecting, you know, for a year to you know, at the end of the year to have the outcomes and to draw the conclusions that he did. And he wasn't even a football guy. He hated football. But he recognized all of these things that I listed and more. He had 17, and I don't think I listed 17 of those, but they were all very positive outcomes that kids had as part of being an athlete and a sport participant that they didn't necessarily have as students in a classroom. So I just modified it slightly mm-hmm. because of the current, you know, situation that we're dealing with, you know, right now. And I gave him credit, obviously, for writing the article, but I did want to indicate that I modified it slightly because I think it fit that too.
Yeah.
Why football is, yep.
I agree with you, Coach. And we're going to continue on and hit some of these points that you shared. I think the most poignant and, you know, the next one. In football, the unexpected happens all the time. You know, coaches are really good at adjusting and teaching their players to adjust. It is a game of adjustments. It's a game of the unexpected. And it's, you know, before we got going, you know, you and I were talking about how we kind of were, you know, working through and having worked through. I think you and I talked at the beginning of the, you know, the shutdown because of the coronavirus, and we were about ready to come out of that. And then all of a sudden, you know, we were hit with another thing that's, you know, it's shaking the world a little bit here. And, you know, again, we're all working to, how do we adjust? How do we move forward? Cause it's not about, you know, quit. It's about, we got some work to do.
I think that, you know, that's one of the things that I respect so much about the game is that, you know, there's a whole lot of moving parts. And I think we got more people on the field at one time than maybe not every sport known to man, but, you know, certainly more than baseball, more than basketball, you know, more than soccer. You add the officials to, you know, to that equation. So there's a lot of moving parts, and things don't always go as expected. I mean, you know, from snap to whistle, you know, mm-hmm. our 11 and their 11, you know, this was the plan, you know, with the offensive call, and this was the response, you know, that the defense hoped to make. But we know that, you know, with all those moving parts, you know, the intention of the play didn't always look like it was supposed to. And at some point, probably in the middle of the play, or at some point before the whistle, you know, there were a lot of changes, a lot of adjustments that had to take place. And a lot of communication, you know, both, you know, in the huddle, when we huddle, and at the line of scrimmage, and certainly defensively, you know, there's a whole lot of that going on. But we have to be able to handle the unexpected. And you know, the last couple of months is proof of that.
Yeah, well, and as you said, the communication is such an important part. I mean, to me, it's one of my favorite parts of the game. And, you know, if you stand down on the sidelines, you hear it all. Just, you know, you think about this, 22 guys communicating in about 6 seconds to make sure everybody is straight and doing the right thing. And, you know, utmost importance to the game is being able to communicate. And it's certainly right now, I think, an important thing for all of us to be able to capitalize on some of those skills. You know, another point you have here, Coach, in football, emotions and human contact are expected. Players are supposed to talk to one another while things are going on.
That's exactly right. The best example of that that I ever had experienced was the very first Patriot practice that I attended. You know, Josh was a younger coach, you know, it was many years ago, but Bill allowed me to come to a practice. And when I walked away from the practice, it wasn't the size or the speed or the impact that blew me away. It was the volume and the amount of communication on both sides of the ball, you know, from you know, Tommy Brady getting the play from Josh, and, you know, sharing it in the huddle and going to the line of scrimmage. I mean, it was loud and it was never ending. I mean, right up until the snap of the ball, you know, Tommy's changing the play and then Teddy Bruschi's on the other side and he's, you know, reacting to, you know, whatever change Tommy might have made, or if the guy went motion, or they traded a tight end. No, I mean, tons of communication, you know, for 6 seconds worth of action. You know, somebody told me that's how long the average play lasts, but it blew me away. Not the speed, not the impact, not the size. It was the volume and amount of communication that takes place. And our game requires that.
Yeah, and you know, we've been talking about that, like right now, that's probably one of the biggest things in how we move forward together is communication is going to be key. You know, we're, like I said, we can't be driven by what we see or hear through the filters of the media all the time, that we have to actually communicate with people, you know, our neighbors, stepping out of our neighborhood, you know, the people in our community, the people we work with, and trying to expand beyond that. And, you know, that's what's going to make this work in the long run. Another point you made here, Coach, is that football is more than the sum of its parts. Players blend individual specific skills with their teammates, right? And that's, we're looking at that, not just, you know, the micro of football, the macro of how can we apply that to the bigger world, that you know, we get better and our country's great and we're able to do great things as a community, as a population, because of the sum of our parts, rather than you know, everybody just trying to have the exact same skills or beliefs or all those things, that it's the blended parts that are going to make this nation stronger.
Well, and that's the thought that I lost a minute ago, that you helped me remember it. And this, I also think, is unique to football. You know, in basketball, the five guys on the floor, they all dribble, they all pass, they all shoot, they all rebound, they all defend. They do the same things. In baseball, other than the pitcher, you know, everybody fields. Everybody bats, and I understand that outfielders, you know, have different responsibilities than maybe infielders. A catcher's different, perhaps. But for many of them, they do the same things. They all throw. They all catch. They all. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But in football, that's not at all the way that it is. And somehow we make it work. I mean, you know what old linemen are doing. You know, when wide receivers and quarterbacks are working, you know, separately in a group period, and what running backs, and, you know, and then we got the other side of the ball and special teams and so on and so forth. The fact that you know, we can have all of these different roles, all of them are important, all of them require uniquely, you know, position specific skills, but they don't mean anything unless we put all of the position groups together, all the individual players together, you know, to try to develop and you know, execute at a level where we got a successful play. But that's a more complicated, you know, sport to coach. It's a more complicated sport to play, I think. But it also speaks to, you know, the participants' ability to do that, you know, to function as an O-lineman, to function as a defensive back, and how my role and my responsibility fits with all those other position guys, you know, in the huddle. But it's what makes football special, another thing to me.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, the whole theme of this, like we started with, Coach, is that football provides a shining example of being able to bring all these different people together to function as one in what is a very difficult environment. You know, football is a tough sport. You know, it's every sport has its different aspects of toughness. But, you know, football, you have to be both physically and mentally strong and tough to be able to play the game. And I think, you know, when we talk about the coaching community and the great programs out there, the great coaches out there, what they do in their communities is impactful in bringing people together and being an example of that. I think as I've looked at this, one thing that's really come to mind, Coach, is that, you know, maybe we haven't done enough to step outside of leading by example. You know, and I equate this back to coaching and thinking of certain players who I've had on teams where, you know, they wanted to lean on what was comfortable for them, which was, I'm a leader by example, Coach. I'm not really the guy to step up and talk and, you know, be vocal about things and, you know, and that's okay. I mean, I think you learn a lot from those examples, but, you know, I think we have to find ways as coaches now to do what we've done, you know, in our small little environments and be able to extend that to our communities and to teach our young men that it's your responsibility now when you leave this program to go out and take what you've learned and spread that to other people, because you're going to come across all kinds of people who you go to school with, who you work with, who you live with, that, you know, that understanding of team might not be something that they were brought up in, right? Not everybody played football. Not everybody had that experience, but those young men and women that we send out into the world understand that. So I think it's a time where we have to maybe step out of our comfort zone a little bit and figure out, I don't know all the answers yet, Coach, but figure out how can we step beyond by, well, this is a good example for our community, and maybe do a little more work to educate people on how those things are done and bringing people together outside of our programs.
Well, the whole concept of team to me isn't as immediately understood, and we should not understand. We'd be mistaken if a lot of our kids, if we assume that they understood the concept of team, because in the society that we live in today, you know, a lot of their homes are fractured. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that little, you know, small little team in a family unit, you know, that I grew up in and, you know, people have forever, you know, but, you know, there's a large portion of our society where that family unit isn't the one that I experienced. And so, you know, getting kids to grasp that and understand that when they come from maybe an environment where it is fractured, you know, that's something that we have to address. That's something that we have to repair. We have to teach, introduce. Another thought that I had when you were talking just a minute ago is, you know, we won a championship, and I remember at the banquet, you know, telling the players and the parents and the people that were in attendance in my closing remarks that I hope that winning, you know, the state and national championship wasn't the greatest thing that they did in their life. You know, I urge them and hope that years from now, you know, they'd be, you know, as successful, you know, as a parent, as successful as a husband, as successful as a father, as successful a person in the community doing whatever job it is that they did. I hope that they went on to bigger and better things. And this wasn't the highlight of their life, though at the moment it was. And so I think that's also one of those messages that okay, we can achieve this, but let's not let this be the best thing that we ever did. You know, let's try to, you know, duplicate that kind of success in the other areas of our life.
Absolutely. Well, Coach, I think you've done a great job in being that example and, you know, raising some great young men in your family, as well as some great young men in your football programs. And I think coaches out there are doing a great job. I just want to be able to have some of these conversations to continue to encourage them to do great things in the world, to have their programs be examples, maybe find ways to expand that a little bit more. And I think that starts with right now, maybe listening and understanding. I know a lot of guys are feeling compelled to say something, that they have to do that. And I think there's been some great things said, but I think also you have to process this and make sure that message isn't just a copy and paste, that it's something that is heartfelt and really hits home in your community, and lead in whatever way you can lead during this time.
Yeah, that's a great point that you just made. And when we talk about communicating, I think sometimes we get stuck on the speaking part of that and not the listening part of that. You know, some of us are way better at the speaking part than we are at the listening part. And I think we got to get better at that listening part. You know, that's half of communication. I'm reminded of that. Josh says that Bill Belichick is the best listener that he's ever known in his life. And who would know that about that man? I mean, he's a great coach, but you know, people wouldn't understand that perhaps. But Josh is convinced that he's the best listener that he's ever been around. And we all got to work harder at that part of communication. That's a great point that you just made.
Well, Coach, I appreciate you spending time with me. And I know this is, like I said, a very challenging time for a lot of people out there. I hope there's something they can get from this message, from this discussion. And as always, to reach out on Twitter, interact there. I think it's a good way to get some conversations started. Coach McDaniel, you can follow him. It's at @Thomas_TMCDWGH. And, of course, I'm at Coach K. Grabowski. Coach, as always, good to talk with you. And I'm hoping the next opportunity we get to talk that, things are headed in a positive direction, and maybe we could focus on a little ball next time too.
That'd be great. But today, if what we did is generate some hope and some optimism for people, then this has been a great conversation, and it's been time really well spent. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you for listening today. And please, I encourage you to lead in your communities. And I think one great way to do that during this time, and to do something that helps take some action to making things better in this world, better in our communities, is the Build the Bridge Challenge, which was put together by two coaches in Cleveland Heights, Ohio, and one in Beachwood, Coach Kahari Hicks, Coach Max Stevens, Coach Damian Creel. Go back to yesterday's episode if you don't know about that, and please tune in and listen to what they're doing, something very simple to bring people together. Again, it's the Build the Bridge Challenge. Check out all we're doing to advance and grow the game at fdm.usafootball.com, where you will learn more about our football development model and how it can help your youth football program in your community.